From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. An exchange of words between Washington and Moscow that got hyped by the U.S. media was apparently nothing more than a matter of emphasis and translation. This was Russia's President Vladimir Putin speaking at his annual marathon press conference on Friday about the issue.
I was a bit surprised by the statements of some of the representatives of the acting administration. For unknown reasons, they started trying to prove that the U.S. armed forces are the most powerful in the world. Nobody ever doubted it. If you listened to me carefully yesterday, I spoke about strengthening our nuclear capacities, and in conclusion, I said that Russia is now stronger than any potential, and pay attention here, aggressor. That's very important.
Putin's comments came a day after these comments from U.S. State Department spokesperson John Kirby on Thursday in response to the following question from a journalist.
I don't know if you saw the comments today about Russia being the world's best military. I don't know if you're chafed at that. You don't think the Russian performance in Ukraine or in Syria raises them to preeminent military status?
I don't think in all of human history there has ever been a military as capable and as intelligent, as strong, as well-led, as well-resourced as the United States military is today.
RT's Murad Gazdiev has more.
Relations between Russia and the United States, it's no secret, rock bottom. They might improve with Trump, but a little background for you about this story, about the aggressive. Vladimir Putin recently said that the Russian military now is strong enough to defeat any aggressor. Cue various officials from the Pentagon, from the White House, coming out with macho statements about the strength of the United States military, inadvertently putting themselves into the position of Vladimir Putin's hypothetical aggressor. He said he didn't mean the United States, he meant anyone who attacks Russia.
Putin also addressed allegations of Russian involvement in the 2016 U.S. presidential election.
The great figures from American history who were Democrats would surely roll in their graves. Roosevelt would for sure. He was a great figure for the world and American history who united the nation during the hardest years of the Great Depression of the late 30s and during the Great Patriotic War as well. The current administration is dividing the nation, that's obvious.
And now we bring you excerpts from the four-hour marathon press conference that President Vladimir Putin held Friday in Moscow.
Good afternoon, colleagues, friends. Let's start. I talked to my helper here, and we decided that I will not give any long opening remarks at the beginning, so let's just start with your questions straight away.
Let's traditionally start with one of the journalists from the Kremlin pool who's been working in the pool since late 90s. So, Mayak Radio, please. The microphone. Маяк, Вести ФМ, Mr. Putin. So the year is at its end, and we'd like to assess what's the state of the Russian economy right now. So this year you used such terms as turbulence, bottoming out, and such. Or I could even quote the joke you told us last year about last year being the white stripe, not the black one.
As we look at the results of our work in the outgoing year, of course, everything's relative. So we have to take a look at basic fundamental indicators, specifically macroeconomic indicators, and see what the situation is like in 2016. I looked at the latest data yesterday. I had a meeting with certain experts, certain colleagues last night. And the basic indicator, GDP, decreased by 3.8% last year. This year we'll see a slight decrease, but it's not going to be 3.7 any longer. It's going to be about 1%, we think. Then they adjusted the figure and said it's going to be 0.7%. Then they said 0.6%. Then in November we saw slight growth. And at the end of the year, it's likely that we'll see a 0.5-0.6 negative growth. The reason this happens is because we see some growth in the real sector, trucks, engineering, heavy industries, road construction, transport, chemical industry, a light industry, processing industry, agriculture. Of course, we see growth in those industries. Actually, in agriculture, growth has been quite substantial. It was 2.6 last year, and this year we expected to see 3.2%. Currently, we have 4.1% growth. So it will be at least 4% at the end of the year. So, if you look at this indicator, I think we see some positive developments here. The second indicator is the inflation rate. You may remember that last year it was quite high, even for our economy, because our economy is somewhat special because of its structure. Due to our import substitution programs in agriculture, we were not able to replace all the imports in agriculture, but still, we see positive developments in agriculture, and this year inflation will be very different. I'd like to remind you that the best figure we had was in 2011, and that was 6.1%. This year, the inflation rate will definitely be less than 6%. Most probably, we think, we thought it would be 5.7-5.8%. Now it looks like it's going to be 5.5. So it's going to be an all-time low inflation rate, which means that soon we'll be able to reach our target of 5% and then 4% inflation rate. The budget deficit. Last year the budget deficit was 2.6, I think. This year it will be a little larger than that. I will explain why later. Currently, after the first 10 months of the year, it's 2.4, and then it's going to be 3.7 at the end of the year. I think this is an acceptable figure because our trade balance is positive. It's over $70 billion surplus. Yes, the reserve fund has been somewhat depleted, but the National Welfare Fund remains pretty much unchanged. Our reserves stay at the level of $100 billion, and the foreign exchange reserves of the central bank have actually increased, went up from 368 to almost 400 billion dollars. So this is quite a substantial cushion. We see an increased amount of cargo being shipped, which is also a positive indicator. Capital outflow is reducing. Let's take a look at the figures from last year. In 2014, it was $500 billion. In 2015, it was 57. In 2016, during the first 6 months, it was like $9 to $10 billion. By the end of the year, it will be up to $12 billion, I think. So on the whole, this is also quite positive. Well, do we have problems? Of course we do. We need to make sure our economy continues to grow. And we see slight decrease in real income of the people. Of course, that's not good. And this also affects demand, consumer demand, and affects investment. But actually, we see some positive developments here as well. In the last few months, we saw a very slight, but still, increase in real wages in a real sector. So on the whole, this makes us optimistic about the future.
Ну вот да. Ну и у нас если говорить о социальной сфере, у нас сохраняется
As far as our social programs are concerned, we see positive developments with the demographics. We see slight increase in population. The birth rate decreased a little, but the mortality rate decreased more substantially, and the overall dynamic is positive. I'd like to mention that on the whole, we are proceeding as we planned. The plan we presented to our people is being implemented positively on the whole.
Сельское хозяйство, большой желтый плакат, заметный.
Question about agriculture. You with a big yellow poster.
Здравствуйте. Аграрный медиахолдинг Светич.
Hello. Holding Svetich. My question is about the subsidies for Russian agricultural machinery. They support the industrial part of it and the agriculture itself. So my question is this. Do you think there will be more financing involved? Are you going to make it a permanent measure or just an stay, or will it remain an anti-crisis one?
Well, if you have anti-crisis measures, they cannot be permanent by definition. The purpose is to overcome the crisis and achieve sustainable growth. And this is based on demand. Of course, we have to generate demand. But I think, actually, agricultural machinery, I may have said this earlier elsewhere, we see positive developments in the industry of agricultural machinery. We see significant growth there, and this affects our GDP in general. But we should realize that this particular industry and other industries should not be subsidized by the government permanently. They should operate based on demand. And the way to generate more demand is to develop agriculture. If agricultural companies have more incomes, more revenue, they can invest and purchase new machinery. So, like I said, we see positive developments here. Agriculture has been growing by over 4%, and as revenue of agricultural companies continue to grow, we'll see more money coming into companies that develop and produce, manufacture agricultural machinery as well. But next year, the government will continue subsidizing certain industries that really need government support. On the whole, we will spend 7.5 billion rubles to subsidize the industry, and 216 billion rubles for agriculture in general. So we expect to see positive effect. Since we started talking about agriculture, I expect there will be more questions about agriculture later. We are happy for our farmers. We saw that the yield really increased. This year we'll have over 119 million tons. This is an excellent result. I would like to thank everybody for this result. We've never seen anything like it in modern history, in recent history of Russia. Of course, during the Soviet period, back in the 1970s, we had sometimes even higher figures, like in 1973, 1976, but even back then, still, we did not have enough grain, enough fodder. But today, because of structural changes in the agricultural industry, we can see that this result we have achieved is unique and provides us with amazing opportunities for developing agriculture further.
This sector, please. Argumenty fakt. Thank you. Alexander Kolesnichenko. This is a good opportunity to talk some more about the economic growth that you've told us about. So the world is on the verge of technological change and improvement. Without it, any growth would be impossible. So we've been talking so much about new technologies, and in your last address you talked about it a lot as well. But it seems that we are behind other countries, and quite significantly. So are we really behind? Is it forever? What do you think about it? Maybe you can tell us which spheres suffer from the most problems now.
We do have problems, and some experts believe that our economy is unable to pick up newest achievements and developments in science and research. I don't quite agree with them, though. The problem with economies like ours is that when you have petrodollars, when you have extra revenue from fuel, you can get cash easily from this industry. Other sectors tend to be underdeveloped. So, to modernize the economy, to restructure it, to diversify it, the government has been working for quite a number of years now, stimulating other sectors, particularly high-tech industries, and we've been investing less than OECD countries, for example. We've been investing less in high-tech industries. They invest about 2.4% of their GDP. In Russia, it's 1.2% of GDP. But still, this superstructure I mentioned is quite effective. First of all, we have our technology initiative program. We have a special program for the period until 2025. So in May, the government will have to report on that. We have, for example, in the Far East, in East Siberia, we have priority development areas, we have high-tech clusters, special areas with special tax benefits and such. And in certain industries, like the IT industry, this special benefits have been applied for a number of years now, and they've proved quite effective. For example, quite recently, our level of exports was almost zero. Recently, I already mentioned these figures elsewhere, we export $14 billion worth of weapons, and our IT exports are worth $7 billion by now. And in some industries, we are totally competitive now. At this point, though, they may look like just isolated pockets of advanced research, but there are certain areas where we are world leaders. Well, this includes nuclear technology, of course, some other areas, aircraft manufacturing, certain areas there, the defense industry, we saw real boom there. And this will also carry over to civilian sectors as well. You know that we instructed the government to use the advantages we have in the defense industry and to apply this technology in civilian industries as well. So we should not be discouraged. We have every reason to believe that we will be leaders in many key areas, and this situation will continue for many years to come. And of course, we believe that we should be part of the global trend. We should be shifting to a new technology revolution. We should be leaders. And we have every opportunity to do so, especially considering the high level of education and science in Russia.
Let's go with Crimea, please. Maxim Nikolaenko, Krim Inform. Well, our publication is just a week older than Crimea. We have different opinions in Crimea about this period since we joined Russia. And maybe that's because we don't have the full information, but that's not the case with you. You have all the information from different sources and reports. So, how is Crimea developing now? How is it integrating into the Russian economy? Maybe you have to answer that very often, but still, there is a development program, but it's not going very well. It's under 5%. That's the approximation. So it's very difficult to see which sphere should be developed in Crimea. And we have objective reasons for that. We don't have enough energy resources, and thank you for the supply. We have our old natural gas, but we do need extra resources. We're waiting for more gas, we're waiting for stations to be built. And let's also talk about the bridge. So we call it the Crimea Bridge. But Moscovites associate that name with a different place. So what would you call that bridge?
Well, you just said it's Kerch Bridge. Well, I didn't invent that. It was my idea to build it, and it's up to you to name it. By the way, these projects were initiated, you know, as early as the Tsarist times. Then the Soviet authorities tried to build it. Then, you know, the Nazi Germany tried to build it, but they did it in a poor way. It was carried away. But I hope that one day we will normalize our relations with Ukraine, and it will be very helpful for humanitarian and commercial ties with Ukraine. So it's very good for the future. And certainly that will help to improve the economy. So it's not just to attract more tourists. As for your question on integration and the progress in it, you might know that the program that you were referring to, the 2020 program, so it offers quite preferential provisions. It's like a free economic zone, but actually it turned out that both legally and economically, integration has been far more difficult than we expected. And it's not everything that depends on the federal authorities. You need timely and efficient management, thrifty management of the resources that have been allocated. But even in this, there is a problem for the local government. People, it's hard for people to understand of how to align those processes with the Russian legislation. What kind of administrative procedures have to be used? It takes time. Certainly, it's underway. And I believe overall we have a good pace. You remember I said that industrial production has been on the increase, and on some of the industries, you know, there's quite a significant growth, up to 20%. Overall, there will be, well, about between 0.7 to 0.9%. That's the average. While in Crimea, we have 6%. As for Sevastopol, it's 25% of growth in industrial production. That's all due to the fact that federal agencies, federal companies, nationwide companies have placed their orders with Crimean companies. And also, the level of unemployment is low. And I'd like to go back to one of the first questions. You know, it used to be 5.6, 5.7. This year we have 5.5. Well, in Crimea, it's even lower, and that's very good. It's a positive sign. What areas could be promising for Crimea? Definitely, it's ship repairs, ship construction, some of the segments of the chemical industry, agriculture. Actually, we allocated 3 billion rubles for the support of agriculture. That's five times more than last year and tenfold more than in 2014. You just need to spend that money in an efficient way and certainly achieve payback on that money. And certainly you need to develop tourism. Once this bridge is put into operation, the number of tourists will increase. And I certainly want the high-tech sector to develop in Crimea, you know, without any impact on the environment. We need to create high-tech jobs, good paying jobs. If you look at the pay level in Crimea, it's a bit lower than Russia's average. In Russia, we have 35,000 rubles. Across Crimea, it's 24,000, and in Sevastopol, it's 25,000 rubles. But I'm sure things will improve, definitely. Just need to take steps that regional authorities have a decent level, the same as the country's average. I have no doubts that in a while things would improve. We have Russia's regions where the pay is lower than in Crimea, but certainly Crimea has a lot of potential. You need to understand that. And I'm sure that we'll see some growth there. We first need to resolve issues that have been unresolved for decades. Certainly it's the healthcare sector. We need to have a good clinic in Simferopol. We also have another clinic near Yalta. So certainly training is important. People have never worked on modern equipment, but we will certainly resolve those issues.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.